when Krishna came to Mathura, it appeared that he was willing to go there, at least externally so. When Krishna had left Vrindavan, it seemed that he was indifferent to the feelings of the residents. Krishna was slightly smiling and seemed to be terribly aloof. Other acharyas are describing that internally Krishna was certainly experiencing already feelings of separations just at the thought of leaving Vrindavan, but externally nothing showed like that. It seemed that he was very cool and indifferent. And finally Krishna came to Mathura. Some pastimes took place before Krishna finally entered the wrestling arena. Along with Balaram, they were both carrying a tusk of an elephant over their shoulder, because Krishna had just very playfully killed this elephant, Kuvalayadipa, who was very powerful. That elephant was enormous, and somehow or other, Krishna, that elephant was prodded by a mahout, or the controller of elephants, to attack Krishna. And the elephant itself was aggressive by nature. So, but Krishna had run, as the elephant stormed at Krishna, Krishna had run right between the legs of that elephant and grabbed it by the tail and then pulled it back for quite a distance. So the elephant then turned around and stormed again at Krishna. And this time Krishna held out his foot and tripped the elephant. Then smashed that elephant and broke out the trunks, or the, not the trunks, the tusks. And then Krishna and Balaram each carried a tusk and walked into the wrestling arena. And there were, their Kansa had arranged these wrestlers, Chanura and Mustika, and it became a terrible fight. And these wrestlers were much bigger and more muscular than Krishna and Balaram. And the ladies, they all thought it was an unfair fight. But, well, in a sense, it was an unfair fight. Because, you know, what is the chance that a jiva has against the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So indeed, you know, in a way, it was unfair. When Krishna hit Chanura on the head, the eyes of Anura popped out of its sockets and were dangling like somewhere below his cheeks. Mustika, Balaram cracked his skull. So in that way, these wrestlers were sort of finished. Then some other wrestlers came, and Krishna, he did a serious karate kick, and it said with his toe he split the head of the demon Tosaha. I just read it on the plane, so it's not as fresh in mind. Didn't remember the detail before. Anyhow, then Jiva Goswami describes how after these wrestlers had been defeated, then Krishna invited the cowherd boys for a wrestling match. And it was a whole wrestling match. And then Krishna was defeated by the cowherd boys. And that really like rubbed it in a little more. So at that stage, Kansa just lost it, you know, and just called for the royal guard to arrest Krishna and Nanda Maharaj and confiscate Nanda Maharaj's property and everything. And yeah, then it got too much. when actually Kamsa went after Nanda Maharaj, then Krishna went on fire. And then Krishna jumped over the royal guard. And Kamsa was waiting with a sword, but Krishna waved it aside, knocked his crown off his head, and gave sort of Kamsa a casual slap. And somehow or other Kamsa fell off the stage and died. So you could almost say it was almost like an accident. Other descriptions are that Krishna had Kamsa on the ground and then sort of worked him over. There are different versions of these kind of stories. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, that was the end of that particular era. And after Kamsa had been killed, then this whole situation came about where Krishna told the Yadus, well, it was nice to be here, I'm going to Vrindavan, this is it, I'm going back. The Yadus said, wait a minute. There was a celestial voice that announced that the eighth son of Vasudev and Devaki would kill Kamsa. And who killed Kamsa? Then you are one of the Yadus. Then you have obligations. Then you cannot go anywhere. Then you must stay here and protect your relatives. Krishna's like, I'm going to Vrindavan. So in this way, he got caught by that celestial voice. And then he gave Nanda Maharaj gifts, jewelry and clothes, as if the residents of Vrindavan wanted jewelry and clothes. Can you imagine? So we are seeing how the activities of the spiritual world are unfolding, and how there is that eternal world with the eternal pastimes. And the greatest mystery of those pastimes is the mood of separation. That mood of separation is the most inconceivable aspect of this Krishna conscious movement, because how can it be the highest ecstasy? I mean, we know separation as the highest misery. We know stories of princes and princesses being separated and withering away, right, to the point of death. So that seems to be the ultimate of misery. And then in the movie, when they are united again, and everyone cries liters of tears, and it was such a beautiful movie. And it's that kind of when being united. So it is a mystery that in the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, separation of the Supreme Lord, love in separation, is counted as the highest, as the topmost platform. It is said that as soon as there is separation, the devotee who is totally attached to Krishna cannot think of anything or anyone but Krishna, will only think of Krishna. But when Krishna has left, the intensity of those thoughts of Krishna are even greater than the experience of being in Krishna's presence. That's why separation is the most intense form of attachment to Krishna. Of course, that is not the separation that we are feeling from Krishna. We are separated from Krishna without attachment to Krishna. We are separated from Krishna for a long time at end, and then sort of again coming before Krishna. And then sometimes a moment, sometimes a flash of really coming before Krishna. Otherwise, we enjoy something else. We don't enjoy serving Krishna. We enjoy other tastes, sight benefits. It says, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes them as parangaranjini, the waves enjoying the sight benefits of devotional service. We get prestige or even worship. We become as good as God. And then it's easy to forget God at that stage. Yeah. When we're as good as God. So love of Krishna is a very exalted state of being. For us, there is first a need for purification, first a need for overcoming desires to enjoy the material world. And when these gross desires for material enjoyment are actually conquered, then the second level of desiring more subtly all kinds of recognition in spiritual life. Therefore, one must be one must be ready to think only of Krishna's pleasure and nothing else, and for himself not desire any pleasure. That is love. Love means the pleasure of the other person is first. So that is a very exalted state, and it's like manifested in the residence of Vrindavan. Nanda Maharaj could not think of what to do when Krishna told him he wouldn't go back to Vrindavan. And Krishna had promised, he had promised the residents of Vrindavan before that he would stay only one day in Vrindavan, just enough time to deal with Kamsa, and then and that he would see this bull sacrifice, and then he would come straight back. So, but he didn't. So Nanda Maharaj immediately felt terrible, overwhelming separation of Krishna. Still, Nanda Maharaj was not just thinking of his own feelings of separation. He was also thinking of the feelings of separation of Yasoda and of the residents of Vrindavan. In other words, he was not just thinking of his own relationship with Krishna, because the eternal associates of the Lord, the more they develop their love for Krishna, the more they also develop love for all those who are serving Krishna in love. And therefore they share. And therefore it's not that everyone looks with an envious eye at his neighbor and or at all the people around, and sort of everyone looks envious at everyone and everyone. And that's called social life. No, there is very deep and genuine appreciation, which is based on service. Because everyone can see how everyone else in the spiritual world, how much they are trying to serve Krishna, how much they're eager to satisfy Krishna, and everyone is impressed with the service attitude of everyone else. Therefore, there is no no spirit of seeing shortcomings. Still, some may serve Krishna even better than others, and that's appreciated. Mm. Therefore, Nanda Maharaj was also thinking. He's also thinking of Yasoda. He was thinking of the residents of Vrindavan. What will they say? So Nanda and Krishna said, "Don't worry. Just have to kill a few demons. Just a few, and then I'll come back. I'll be back very soon." Hmm. But there were always a few more demons to be killed. So Krishna didn't go, and Krishna sent Uddhava. Uddhava came to Vrindavan, and Uddhava met Nanda Maharaj, and Uddhava was telling Nanda Maharaj that actually we should understand that Krishna is present everywhere. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is that verse, Avara Jangama Deke Nadeke Taramurti Sarvadrahaya Istadeva Spurti. That wherever we look, whether we look at moving living beings or non-moving living beings, we see everywhere Krishna. Krishna in his all-pervading form, present everywhere, because you see Krishna behind everything. Where's the energy of the sun come from? How come there are so many endless waves in the ocean? Where does all this energy come from? Krishna. Always new living entities taking birth again and again. Where does all this come from? Everything from Krishna. So one can see Krishna like that. Very easily. Everywhere. So, Uddhava was very learned, because Uddhava was a disciple of Brihaspati, who is the spiritual master of the demigods. So therefore, Uddhava was the perfect person. He was able to explain the philosophy like no one else. And he looked like similar to Krishna, because he was his cousin. And so, but when Uddhava explained this philosophy, Nanda Maharaj just thinking, this Uddhava is just a child. He's just a child, still wet behind the ears. He does not understand anything. Although Uddhava was such a great scholar, Nanda Maharaj was not impressed. Why was Nanda Maharaj not impressed? Because ultimately, yes, it is a fact, Uddhava was right. One who has transcendental vision is never separated from Krishna, sees Krishna everywhere. Everywhere, because Krishna is always present. How can one say Krishna is not present? Only to one who is blind, Krishna is not there. Those who have whose eyes have been opened by transcendental knowledge, they see him all the time and everywhere. That is Krishna consciousness, to always see Krishna, never forget him for a moment. See everything connected with Krishna, and that way we see Krishna. We see Krishna's energy and Krishna behind it. But Nanda rejected it. He rejected it. He said, because that may be, Krishna may be everywhere, behind everything, everything may be his energy, but that's not satisfying to the heart. So, because that doesn't fulfill the relationship. We want to see Krishna in person, so that we can personally serve him. Because it's that devotional service that is the essence. So the key is devotional service. Somehow or other. Therefore, Krishna consciousness means to accept a service. And to just, somehow or other, take that service and dedicate oneself to that service with full energy, with all one's personal might and ability. That is the spirit, a service, to take a service. Haridas Thakur took the service of chanting the holy name. For that, he became Ninam Acharya. But that was his service, to continuously chant. It's not an easy service. But so he did. It is said that Maharaj Parikshit, he attained perfection by hearing, simply by hearing. Sukadev Goswami, by glorifying Krishna. Sravanam Kirtanam, like that. Akrura, remember the Lord. He said, Akrura, before he went to Vrindavan, he had an enormous, he drove in his chariot from Mathura to Vrindavan, and he had this incredible meditation about Krishna. He's just thinking about Krishna, seeing Krishna everywhere and having a great desire to see Krishna. So different devotees may do different service, but one is to really accept the service. Srila Prabhupada brought that service down to the realm where we are active. Because we are not active in chanting. So how long can we chant? It's difficult. We chant for a while, we get tired, mind gets tired, fingers get tired, everything tired. Beats are so heavy. Gosh. Eyelids also. Oh, mind restless. Difficult to chant. Hearing. Difficult. Sleep. Srimad Bhagavatam. It's like some people, they're not avid readers, and it's for, and they can just finish the Bhagavatam. And you ask them, what did you read? And then they go, and some of the small books, and half the Bhagavad Gita, and then you know, they're never going to read the Bhagavatam. Alright, not everyone can. But the Bhagavatam is such a blessing. If we could only break that mental block and read the Bhagavatam, that would be such an asset. If only we could just every day read the Bhagavatam. So like that, things are brought into our realm. And we hear about the spiritual world and the resonance of the spiritual world and what is unalloyed love. And we get an idea that it is not just an experience on the surface, but that love for Krishna is very deep and overwhelming and everything for the devotee of the Lord.